Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
After I recorded the interview that you are about to hear, I threw out a bunch of clothes. We had done a closet cleaning not too long ago, and I had set aside a bag of clothes to be donated. You've done this too, I'm sure. You don't want to throw them out when they could still do some good. And when I put those clothes aside, I knew they weren't great clothes. They weren't durable. They had some stains. A couple had small rips. Mostly, they were cheap, fast fashion. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
So today's video is going to be on a Shein unboxing.
A Forever 21 sports bra haul.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 40% off.
Gaffers, everything you need for the summer holidays.
Shop in H&M. Be stylish. Be trendy.
I was going to donate a bag of clothes just like that because I figured, you know, someone could use them, even if they were crappy. And then I learned that, in fact, someone probably could not. That instead of altruistically putting my old clothes on someone else's back, I was dumping my old clothes in someone else's landfill. A landfill that was halfway around the world and already overflowing with clothes just like mine. And also on fire. So I threw my own crappy clothes out in my own trash can. Have a listen to this and find out why. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Linton Besser is a foreign correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Hey, Linton.
Yeah, good morning, Jordan.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. The first thing that I want to ask you is to just describe the landfill in Ghana that you visited. I know our listeners can't see it, but it is, I guess impressive is a weird word for it, but that's what it looks like.
Well, I went to several. This is the problem in Accra in Ghana, is the city is dotted with this bloom of irregular, illegal, informal dump sites. But I think the one you're referring to is this mountain of textile waste that overshadows the city's biggest slum, a slum called Old Fatima. And it's on the shore of the Kola Lagoon, which was a sacred lagoon in Ghana for generations and now is beyond recognition. It's a kind of black cesspool of stagnant water and waste. Huh. And at its edge is, you know, a kind of 20, 30-meter mountain of refuse. And, you know, it's like any tip site. It smells of that sweetening organic waste. It has, you know, heaps of plastic in it, and waste pickers, work there all day sorting the plastic from other parts of the waste. But 60% of it, Jordan, is clothing. And a lot of it is the brands that your listeners will recognize, big fast fashion brands from across the world. A lot of the clothing is in almost perfect condition. It's got a few tears in it. It might be missing a button or a zip, have a little stain on a cuff. But there it all is in all its multitude of colors. It kind of overshadows the slum beside it. There's longhorn cattle grazing on its summit trying to find bits of uneaten food. It really is a pretty shocking place to be.
So these are clothes that Western listeners would be familiar with. I'm going to get you to explain the process in more detail, but first, just because I know everybody wants to know, how did it get there?
Well, the clothing is brought there every day by laborers, effectively, people who are paid to collect the clothing waste from Accra's big market. It's a market called Cantamanto Market, and it's West Africa's, if not the world's, biggest secondhand clothing exchange. thousands and thousands of retailers, thousands and thousands of bales of used clothing arriving there every day, and being bought and sold and traded. But a huge proportion of that clothing is simply no good, can't be sold, can't be reworn, and ends up being tossed into the streets to be collected every night. And Accra's normal, you know, legal, commercial waste processing capacity has long since filled to overflowing. And so what ends up happening is retailers and importers end up having to pay, you know, local labourers to put heaps of that clothing on their head and walk it out of the market and down the road to Old Fatima, to the slum, and throw it on this informal tip.
How did the clothes get to Ghana in the first place? And just to clarify, so people can understand, these are effectively our clothes that we got rid of. These are not clothes that are sent to Africa new and end up used.
Jordan, these are the clothes that you and I buy when we really shouldn't. When we go into H&M, say, and we look at that shirt, I know this has happened to me, and I think if I lose a couple of kilos, I'll be able to fit into that shirt. I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm. And, it's only $10.
Yeah, exactly. And I never should have, because I've got one just like it in a different color. And it never gets worn, and you move house 3 years later and you bundle it into a sack. And I can't remember. I haven't been to Toronto for a while, but I presume you've got charity bins and commercial clothing bins around the city, and you've certainly, I'm sure, got
everywhere
and charity shops, right?
Yep.
And that's where it comes from. Charities around the Western world use that clothing to fund their good works. You know, it's one of their most important revenue lines. But big bundles of this clothing really should be dealt with as refuse in their home country. And it's not. And it's the same problem in Australia as in Canada. It gets bundled off because the global rag trade has textile dealers in places like the UAE and Pakistan and India who are making profit by on-selling textiles of whatever quality. Because in the end, in Ghana certainly, the importers have no say over the quality of the clothing that they buy. They buy these bales sight unseen. They pay upfront. They can pay as much as, you know, $60,000-$70,000 for a container of clothes, only to open the individual bales and discover that the clothing is no good. It's extraordinary.
Tell me about those bales and how they fuel the markets in Ghana, because I saw some footage that you and your team brought back from that, and it just looks like madness.
It is. It's unbelievable. The first thing to say about Accra is, of course, it's the capital of a developing economy. So it doesn't have the world's best road infrastructure. It's got very little infrastructure, to be fair. So these trucks, the semi-trailers who bring the containers of clothing from Tema Port, they have to arrive there in the middle of the night. That they start parking up at 3 a.m. because otherwise it would be impossible to move in the city. And they have to squeeze into these kind of narrow alleyways and passageways next to the market. And they throw open the back, and by 4 a.m. the market is absolutely chock-a-block, absolutely rammed with importers and traders and retailers who are checking off the bales as they're coming off the back of these trucks, these great big bales as you know, as tall as a man, really, and wrapped in bright plastic, stamped with their countries of origin. I saw stamps from Canada. Clothes come from America, from Europe, from the UK, from Australia, and they get ported around the market. Distributed to the 5,000 odd retailers who work in the trade in Cantamanto Market, and that's where the marketplace begins and the trading begins.
I want to understand the root issue here a little bit better, because, you know, I'm going to admit my own ignorance and probably the ignorance of some people who are listening. I thought that donating clothes through charity that would end up in places like Accra was a good thing, that there was a need for garments there and that we were helping. And to see the images and read your story, you know, we are absolutely not.
It's really complicated. I mean, decades ago, that might have been true. But, you know, the scale of the industry tells the lie to that misconception, if you like. 30 million people live in Ghana. Well, 30 million individual garments arrive every fortnight.
Huh.
No one needs any more clothing in Accra, let me tell you. One of the importers I spoke with, he put it to me like this, Jordan. He said, people in the West have this stupid idea that people in Ghana are running around naked.
Hmm.
Because why are they sending us clothes covered in stains? Do they honestly think we've got nothing to wear?
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is Ghanaians dress really sharply. They have a long tradition of their own beautiful textiles, making, you know, individual items to fit that last a lifetime in, you know, bright, bold colours and amazing patterns. Is that they've got a long culture of looking fine, and really every tier of society that I met when I was there, people took great pride in how they appeared. So they're not going to wear our crap. But there is a whole industry now dedicated to exporting it to places like Ghana, and there are too many people now clipping the ticket, including charities, it must be said, to turn it back around.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
So who's profiting here in the end? Charities are selling these bales of clothing and other people are as well. And who's making the money off of it? It doesn't sound like Ghanaians are really making anything.
Well, there are some Ghanaians who make some money. I met a couple of quite wealthy importers who had climbed their way to the top of that very slippery pole and did big business and had managed to use the capital they'd made from the rag trade for starting other businesses. And it's an important part of the Ghanaian economy, it must be said. But yes, there are people profiteering outside of Ghana and doing the wrong thing. Since I broadcast this documentary, I've been contacted by a slew of people who work in the charity sector who all said, you know, I feel terribly ashamed. We know that we should be sorting these clothes better, but we have a system where the poorest quality clothes still get purchased from us. So it's not as lucrative as the really nice, almost new suit that we hang in our window on Yonge Street and you know, make 100 Canadian on.
Mm-hmm.
But we are still making $1 a sack for, a bag of really poor quality clothes. So our bosses are telling us, put it on the truck and send it off to Pakistan to be sorted. And then, of course, there are the people, those middlemen who it's their business really to push textiles around the world. I mean, I think there is so much clothing now in the world that I don't know how we turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
60% more clothing is being purchased by you and I and all of your listeners than we did 15 years ago, 60% more. You know, there is a whole industry dedicated to pushing out enormous volumes of textiles every day.
That's what I was going to ask you, is we've kind of touched on it a couple of times, but I'm just trying to get a sense of how much fast fashion has interrupted this process, which I imagine must have begun, if not from a good place, at least from a sensible place.
Well, it's become part of the business model of these huge global brands. You know, back in the day, I guess, you'd have a winter season, a summer season, a spring season. Now there's, you know, 52 micro seasons a year, if not more. There's a, you know, really big clothing company named Boohoo. They've got more than 36,000 products available at any one time. You know, they got in trouble in the British Parliament in Westminster a couple of years ago because they were selling dresses worth less than £5 that were of such poor quality. You know, the sewing was so poor, charity shops even were unwilling to sell them because they fell apart after the first wear. And this issue of waste inventory is growing. You know, I'm sure in Canada as well, Burberry got in trouble globally a little while ago. I think it was 2018.
Right, yes.
When they destroyed some 30 million pounds of stock. I think they set fire to it, right?
Yeah.
You know, H&M has an unsold global inventory in the billions of US dollars. So waste is kind of factored in. You know, the factories producing this clothing, you know, obviously operate optimally when they operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know, it's become an enormous beast. I think 2 tons of clothing are bought every minute in Britain alone. You know, I as I said before, Jordan, it really has become a beast. I don't know how you press pause, really, except for consumers maybe making a different decision.
What does the government in Ghana think about it? You've already mentioned that it's a valuable part of the economy, but the local landfills are already overflowing. Is there any way that they could try to get a handle on this, whether it's through regulation or other means? And is that being considered?
A little anecdote. In 2013, Accra opened a World Bank funded, world-class designed waste processing facility. It's called the Pone Landfill. And it was designed to take waste for 15 years and solve Accra's waste crisis. But it was forced to take this textile waste, which has been booming in Cantamanto market. So instead of 15 years capacity, it filled within 5. It then caught a light because clothing can't be compressed in the way organic waste can, and it trapped methane, and it burned for 11 months. Because you can't put water on a fire like that.
Jeez.
And you know, Accra's sky was just darkened with smoke for 11 months from this massive waste fire. Now, that is what it looks like in Accra trying to deal with this problem. And the head of the department charged with this, I'm sorry to say, a very stressed out man named Solomon Noy, you know, he's had it up to his gills with it. He says, we have become the dumping ground for textile waste from the West. And he, you know, he's really tearing his hair out. He says 40% of the clothing arriving in Accra arrives unsaleable, unwearable, you know, instantly reclassified as waste and tossed into the street for him to deal with. So, you know, it is a massive problem. On the other side of the divide, however, the used clothing industry is, like so many of these vested interests, powerful in their own local economy. You know, mm-hmm. they are close to politicians. They look after their interests. They don't want, you know, any kind of government regulation that might stop this. Interestingly, a few years ago in East Africa, Rwanda said, no, we're not going to accept any more used clothing from the West because it is destroying our local textile industry. And, you know, that obviously sent shockwaves through that global textile economy. So you have these two aspects, if you like. But certainly, you know, the people who have to deal with the waste despair. They really despair. You know, Accra's producing 3,500 tons of waste a day. It only has the capacity, the infrastructure, the trucks to deal with 2,000 tons a day. I mean, the maths are kind of incontrovertible.
What happens when reality catches up to the math? I mean, it's obviously unsustainable now. Theoretically, there will be a point at which it is physically unsustainable, right?
Well, you might say, I mean, I think we've passed that point in Accra. I was absolutely staggered at what I saw. It doesn't all go to landfill. A lot of it gets burned. So wherever you walk around the city, there are little pyres of clothing being burnt, by the way. There are also massive bonfires that are regularly lit to burn off waste. But heaps of it, you know, this is a monsoonal country. And so when I was there, it was monsoon, and we got caught in some really, you know, heavy tropical storms. And the clothing simply washes into the sewers. It's a kind of, the city has a medieval network of open sewers, and it gets washed into the waterways and sewerage system of Accra, and a lot of it gets washed out to the ocean. And so I went out there a couple of times to what should be Accra's big draw card. It has a stunning coastline, but it is unrecognizable. The sand is multicolored, and you walking towards it, asking yourself, what is all that plastic on the beach? It's not plastic. I mean, there is plastic waste, and that's a separate issue. But it's colored fabric sticking out of the sand, and you think, oh, it's just a little shred, and you go to pull it, and you can't move it. And what it is, it's a massive tentacle of tangled fabrics that have wound around itself and buried itself meters deep in the sand, and there's thousands of tons of it. It gets washed into the ocean and churns along the seabed, doing God knows what to the aquatic life. The local fishing fleets struggle because these, you know, huge tangles of clothing wind around the motors of their fishing boats. They're having to fish further and further out to sea. I mean, overfishing is one issue, but it's really dangerous coming in and out of Accra now in their traditional fishing boats. So, I mean, have we reached the point of no return already? It is having a direct impact on everyday life in Accra already. The clothing, you know, promotes flooding. It therefore promotes, you know, pools of stagnant water and the breeding of mosquitoes. You know, mosquito-borne disease, you know, is obviously a major health problem and health risk in Accra, you know, and in Ghana. So it's not like I had to go looking for these problems. You know, you walk around the city, and they are right in front of your nose.
I think a lot of people might be listening and feeling guilty about buying that shirt that we talked about earlier. And I don't know if you know, but in Canada, we are in the middle of a federal election. And what I would like to know is, first, you know, when you talk to environmental advocates, what do they say needs to change in this supply chain, for lack of a better word, to start fixing this problem? And two, what can individuals in Western countries do beyond simply, like, stop buying that replaceable garbage?
Well, you know, campaigners lay blame for this problem at the doors of the world's major fashion houses, you know, the likes of Zara and H&M that are producing an astonishing volume of clothing that can never all be purchased and never all be worn. And so they are trying to put pressure on those companies to do things differently. Ultimately, the power is in the hands of consumers. You know, I know that I left Ghana with a couple of decisions in mind, and one of them was I am going to do my utmost not to buy any more clothing until I absolutely have to. You know what I'm going to do, Jordan? I'm going to learn how to darn socks. You know,
yeah.
And another one of these importers, this really stand-up guy, Emmanuel Ajab, fantastic local businessman, he just said, why are you exporting your rubbish? Deal with your rubbish in your own country. Mm-hmm. So what else can be done about this? There's also a role for government. There is a role to try and promote recycling, which, you know, textile recycling is a whole thing we haven't talked about. It's really complicated. It's really difficult to do. And there's no kind of commercially feasible at scale recycling operation I'm aware of anywhere in the world for recycling. And also just query, you know, what can be done to ensure that we are not exporting our waste? You know, what can be done to ensure that, the charity sector, which is probably the most important sector for collecting this donated clothing, is regulated in a way that they're not doing it? I mean, these are the kinds of things that arise when you travel to a place like Accra and you see what's happening. I don't think that people should stop donating clothes. I
want to ask you this question, actually. This is an important question that I meant to get to, because people donate all sorts of things to charity bins and it feels better than throwing it out. It feels like you're helping people. But should we maybe just be donating the stuff that's actually quality that it looks like people could rewear and putting the rest in our own garbage at home?
The term they have for it in Accra is it's a gift. They say you're giving a gift by donating this clothing. Well, is that a gift that you would put in wrapping paper and tie a ribbon around and take to your neighbour or offer to your cousin and be happy for them to wear it and not be embarrassed that it's actually missing, you know, two of the buttons along the front, or that it's the collar is sweat stained? And you know, what a diametrically different shift in perspective is that?
Yeah.
How many of us have been guilty of saying, oh, it's got a tiny tear in it, but, you know, surely someone's going to want it. Well, they don't. I mean, that's the reality, is they don't. They don't wear it. It gets thrown in the rubbish there. If your shirt, your trousers, if they can't be worn by you or your best mate, well, it's actually rubbish. And, there is no point. There is no point putting it in the charity bin.
Linton, thank you so much for this. Thank you for the work you've done. It was certainly educational for me, and I think for a lot of our listeners.
What a pleasure. No worries.
Linton Besser, a foreign correspondent at the other ABC. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Email us in our inbox at TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. Leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, follow, like, super like, whatever it's called, to our show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're on the go, just ask your smart speaker to play The Big Story Podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.